Welcome back, friends. We are here for another story time. It is the end of January, and we are actually from Alaska. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that before. And we are from the interior of Alaska, and right now it's actually pretty chilly. So we have a book that we're going to read that I feel like would be pretty suitable for how our weather is right now. And even though we are not Alaska native or American native, we are native to Alaska because we are all born here.
Thank you.
So this book is called This Place Is Cold by Vicki Cobb. And this is actually a local book written in Alaska. If you visited Alaska, a place near the top of the world during the winter, the first thing you would notice is the cold and the darkness. How cold can it get? Temperatures can drop 50 degrees below zero and even lower. The engine blocks of cars have special built-in heaters. People plug their cars into electrical outlets so that their engines won't get too cold to start. Firewood is so frozen that one tap of an axe shatters a log. Snow squeaks loudly when you step on it. Sometimes the wind is so strong you have to walk at a slant. Your breath turns instantly into tiny ice crystals that glitter in the sun. Your eyebrows and eyelashes freeze, but you don't dare rub them for fear they will break off. It's actually pretty valid if you've ever gotten in the shower and then went out to go start your vehicle and you come back in, your hair will be
What?
solid ice, like flimsy solid ice, but nonetheless. In the winter,
And
the
I
North
can't like
Pole,
move it?
you can, it's just
White?
ice. Yeah, no, it doesn't turn white. You'd have to try it sometime, just don't break it. In the winter, the North Pole points away from the sun, so the top of the world, called the Arctic Circle, is always in darkness. Just below the Arctic Circle, in the heart of winter, the sun comes up around lunchtime for only a few hours. Children wake up when it's dark, go to school in the dark, and come home in the dark. On some winter nights, the sky is decorated by an incredible display of swirling colored curtains of light called the Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights. Water everywhere is frozen. Millions of years ago, rivers of ice called glaciers began to form all over Alaska. Glaciers form in the valleys between mountains as snow piles up from year to year. Since it is always cold, most of the snow doesn't melt. The weight of the piled snow changes the snow into ice. The ice is packed so hard that it changes color. It is no longer clear like an ice cube. The glacial ice is now a bright blue green. Glaciers are nature's giant bulldozers, and do they ever carve up the land?
How is it blue and green? It's just ice.
I don't know, but I've seen it up on like Chin Hot Springs Road. They have big glaciers, and out near Girdwood, past Anchorage, they have glaciers out that way too. It is really beautiful to see. The heavy old ice starts moving very slowly down the mountain, carrying along rocks. It grinds up the soil, which ends up like powder, finer than sand. Glacial ice, full of soil, is black. It takes millions of years for glaciers to carve up the mountains. A valley that was shaped like a V becomes broad and wide at the bottom, like the letter U. In some places, the land looks as if a giant melon scoop has been at work. Some glaciers end at the sea or a lake. The end of such a glacier keeps breaking off into chunks of floating ice called icebergs. Some glaciers melt. The dirt is left behind as a huge, long, high hill. The melting glacier waters run off in many twined, curved streams, forming braided rivers. In some places, ice in the ground doesn't melt, even in the summer. This kind of land is called permafrost because it's permanently frozen. Here and there, deep in the permafrost soil, are blocks of ice called ice lenses. If a house is built over permafrost or on ice lenses, the heat from the house may cause melting. The water seeps away and the thawed ground sinks. The part of the house that rests on the thawed ground will sink too. Sometimes, to straighten out a house, people use jacks like the one you use to change tires, only stronger. You can't count on the floor staying straight or doorways staying square, so some people use curtains inside instead of doors. In many places, the permafrost is covered with a thick layer of short, scrubby plants like blueberry bushes. The land is called the tundra, which comes from a Russian word meaning bare hill. The heat from the sun is trapped by the plants and doesn't pass into the soil, so the tundra plants keep the permafrost from getting warm enough to melt. The plants that grow on the tundra must be able to survive the extreme cold and dryness. There are no large trees here because even in the summer, when the ground thaws a little, there isn't enough water for them to grow. The most ancient plants are the scrubby lichens, Lichens have survived for millions of years because they are a partnership of two plants. One plant is a fungus. A fungus cannot make its own food, but its shape allows it to catch rainwater. The other plant has no shape that you can see. It is millions of tiny green plants called algae, which live so closely with the fungus that they seem to be one plant. The algae make the food the fungus needs, while the fungus collects the water the algae needs to make food. Lichens can grow on rocks since they have no roots and they don't need soil. Lichens grow very, very slowly. A lichen only 2 inches across may be hundreds of years old. One kind of lichen is called reindeer moss. This might be because it is shaped like a reindeer's antlers, or maybe because reindeer eat it. The tundra is the summer grazing land of reindeer and their slightly larger cousin, the caribou. It is also the home of the largest member of the deer family, the moose. The male, called a bull, can be 7.5 feet tall at the shoulders and weigh almost a ton. His antlers alone can weigh 100 pounds. Moose shed their antlers and grow a new set every year. Bulls use their antlers to fight each other over the females, called cows. The muskox, a distant cousin of the wild goat, also eats plants of the tundra. The muskox looks the same as it did millions of years ago. It gets its name from the sharp, sweet, musky smell that the males give off. When danger threatens, muskoxen herds are noted for standing shoulder to shoulder in a circle with their young in the center. This stand protects the young from wolves and other hunters, but it is no protection from human guns and arrows. 100 years ago, the muskoxen were hunted almost to extinction for their meat and their wool. The muskox has a long, shaggy coat that sways like a skirt in the breeze. Next to the body is a thick layer of wool that is 8 times warmer than the sheep wool and softer than cashmere. This wool is shed in patches in the summer. Eskimo women gather this wool and comb tame muskoxen to collect more. They knit this fine wool into very expensive hats and scarves. Laws protecting the muskox have helped this animal make a remarkable recovery. Today, muskoxen are raised for their wool on ranches, and some have been set free to roam the tundra again in wild herds. It's very tongue-twisting to say muskoxen over and over. But do you remember that place down south of Anchorage that is the Wildlife Conservation Center? And they have an entire farm of those muskox?
I really want to touch one.
I know. I wish I could, too. They look really soft. They're not quite as tame as we would want them to be, right? The most dangerous animals in Alaska are the bears. The world's largest meat eater is the brown bear. It weighs almost a ton, a powerful 1,600 pounds, but no one wants to run into a hungry grizzly or polar bear either. All bears kill small animals for food, and some will attack a sleeping camper and raid a tent for food. People who travel in bear territory learn to respect bears. Some hikers use a walking stick with bells that ring with each step so they won't surprise the bears. These people never eat in the same place they camp because bears might be attracted to the smell of food and surprise them while they're sleeping. In addition to meat and fish, bears have a sweet tooth and love berries and honey. They eat well through the summer and fall to put on enough weight so they can sleep through the coldest winter months in their snug dens. White polar bears have fur that is different from all other animals. Close to the body is a thick layer of woolly fur for staying warm. Long guard hairs stick out of the fur. The guard hairs look as if they're made of plastic. They are hollow like straws and always stick out. So when the polar bears swim in the icy water while hunting for seals or fish, the guard hairs keep the fur from getting matted down. Water is easily shaken off the polar bear's stiff outer coat. A polar bear's white coat is protective camouflage in the ice and snow, but white reflects sunlight. It's a color for hot climates, not cold. Black is the color that absorbs heat, so nature gave polar bears black skin. The guard hairs trap heat from the sun and conduct it to the skin, which absorbs it. Under the skin is a layer of fat that also keeps the animal warm. Polar bears have thick fur between the pads on the bottoms of their feet to keep their feet from freezing as they walk over the ice. Like other bears, polar bears are fierce and dangerous. Killing a polar bear was a tradition for Eskimo boys on the way to becoming men. Polar bears are hunters and fishers. They hunt sea mammals like small whales and walruses, but their favorite food is the seal. It takes a lot of skill for a polar bear to catch a seal. There's no way the bear can outswim a seal to catch it. Polar bears attack seals when they are resting on the ice or when they come up for air at the edge of the ice. But polar bears are not the worst enemy of sea mammals. People have hunted them for centuries. Seals have been hunted for their shiny, thick fur. Walruses have ivory tusks that they use to dig up clams and mollusks on the bottom of the sea.
Unluckily for the walrus, the ivory can be carved into tools, jewelry, and small statues. Today, to protect the walrus, only Eskimos are allowed to hunt them and carve the ivory. All sea mammals have a layer of blubber under their skin to keep them warm.
I bet that one's the king, because walruses believe that the one with the longest tusk is the king.
Oh, I did not know that. Interesting.
It told me on Octonauts.
Octonauts? Eskimos hunted sea mammals for their blubber as well as for their meat. Eating animal fat helped the Eskimos make a layer of fat under their own skins to stay warm. Whales, the largest mammals of all, have the most blubber, and it was for blubber that they once were hunted. The blubber of whales can be cooked down into a fine oil that people once used in lamps to light their homes. Instead of teeth, one kind of whale has a mouth full of long, flexible plates with fringes trailing behind. These plates are called baleen, and the whale is called a baleen whale. It eats by swimming along with its mouth open, taking in water containing millions of tiny plants and animals that float in the ocean. Some baleen whales eat up to 4.5 tons of this stuff a day, so a baleen whale doesn't need teeth. It needs a strainer to trap its food, and that's what the baleen is. Before plastic was invented, baleen was used to make umbrella ribs and eyeglass frames and the stiff supports of ladies' underwear. Baleen can also be peeled into long, thin strips. Eskimos weave these strips into beautiful baleen baskets. The nice thing about baleen, too, is if you are anywhere in pretty much any city in Alaska, you'll see it usually in the summertime. Some people from the villages will stand on the corners of the street selling baleen. And I mean, it's just a long piece of, I don't know, thick. How would you describe it, Jaina? It's just a long black piece of something. And what? It almost looks like a huge feather duster. And that is what they have instead of teeth, which is really interesting. Fishing is more than just a sport in the far north. For certain animals and people, it's a skill that is necessary for survival. There are many different kinds of fish in Alaskan seas and rivers, but the most popular and amazing is the salmon. A full-grown red salmon weighs about 10 pounds and lives in the ocean, but it didn't begin its life in the ocean. Salmon eggs hatch in the fresh waters of streams, known as spawning grounds. Baby salmon live in their spawning grounds until they are 2 years old. Then they travel downstream. The streamers get larger and become rivers until they finally join the ocean where the salmon spend their adult life. When a red salmon is about 4 years old, it's ready to lay its eggs. So it begins its return journey back to the exact place where it hatched. This means traveling upstream for hundreds of miles, swimming against the current, leaping over waterfalls in an exhausting trip to its spawning grounds. The females lay their eggs, the male fertilizes them, and then the adults die. Bear and fishermen know that the best way to fish for salmon is to catch them as they make their last journey upriver. Bears eat most of what they catch, but people can be greedy. Today, there are laws that control who may fish for salmon and how many fish they can take. The laws protect the fish to make sure there will be plenty of salmon in the future. The first people to settle Alaska were Indians and Eskimos. They were expert hunters and fishermen. They traveled over the snow with sleds drawn by teams of dogs. They made boats and clothing from animal skins. They told stories, made up songs, and created art that showed how they lived and how they felt about their lives. Why would other people come to this harsh land where they would have to put up with the cold, the snowstorms, the dangerous animals, and the aloneness? In the beginning, some people came for adventure, others for riches. The first people to come from the outside world were whalers and trappers. Whalers wanted oil and baleen. Trappers went after the animals. The thick, shiny furs of seals, otters, beavers, and Arctic foxes and wolves brought high prices in the world of fashion. The furs that were perfect for keeping Arctic animals warm became coats worn by stylish women in climates that were not nearly as cold. Around the beginning of the 20th century, gold was discovered in the middle of Alaska and on the beaches of the Bering Sea. Thousands of hopeful gold miners rushed to Alaska. The people who sold them supplies were not far behind. Besides gold, a giant copper mine and the millions of salmon promised wealth. Some of the people who came to get rich did, although most didn't. But many of them stayed. They married and they had children. They made new lives in small villages. All these people needed ways to get around. A railroad was built to connect the main cities of Anchorage and Fairbanks. But there are many people who lived in the bush in towns, like Unalakleet. Unalakleet? How do you say that?
Unalakleet? Unalakleet? You know,
Unalakleet? Ooh, I feel kind of bad because I don't know how to say this one. Unalakleet. And Shaktulik. Places you can reach only by dog sled, snowmobile, boat after the ice melts, or airplane are called the bush. Villages in the bush created an opportunity for a new kind of work, namely the bush pilot. Bush pilots are skilled in taking off and landing on dirt runways or on runways cleared on frozen lakes. They bring food, medicine, mail, and contact with the outside world. It's no big deal to have a pilot license in Alaska. One person in every 45 has one. There are more private planes than there are in any other part of the world. Alaskans think of their planes as you might think of a family car. People use planes to go to vacation cabins, to visit friends in bush villages, and to get to a major airport to catch a jet to the rest of the world. In 1969, a supergiant oil field was discovered in the Arctic Circle. Oil has been called black gold because the modern world depends on oil for so many things. The problem with the Arctic oil was not how to pump it out of the frozen tundra, but how to get it to the rest of the world. There were no highways or railroads to this remote part of the world, and the nearby sea was frozen for 9 months of the year. The only solution was to build a pipeline 800 miles long to pump the oil to an ice-free port where supertankers could load the oil. Eight oil companies got together to build the pipeline. It was the world's most expensive and challenging project, paid for by private money rather than government taxes. The work would be hard and uncomfortable. Workers would have to spend long hours in the cold, lonely wilderness, but it would pay well, very well. So thousands of young people came from all over America and the world. A worker would wear 3 layers of clothing under down overalls and parka, 2 layers of gloves, 3 pairs of socks, a hat under a hard hat, and a face scarf. It took 10 years and more than 70,000 men and women to build a pipeline that is one of the wonders of modern engineering. Building the pipeline was a modern gold rush that brought many new settlers to this northern land.
We've seen that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it starts up at the top in Prudhoe Bay and goes all the way down to Valdez, I think.
Whoa, that must have taken a while.
Mm-hmm. Some of these settlers were farmers. Summer in the north. Far north has more than enough sunlight to grow certain crops like cabbage and potatoes. The summer is just the opposite of winter. The North Pole points toward the sun, and the Arctic Circle is always in sunlight. Inside the Arctic Circle, the sun doesn't set from March 21st to September 21st. It just keeps making circles around the sky. Just below the Arctic Circle, the sun shines almost all night long. Imagine standing with your back to the rising sun on a June day. The sun rises over your left shoulder, makes almost a complete circle around the sky, and sets behind your right shoulder 22 hours later. The 2 hours it dips below the horizon do not make the night very dark. This was enough daylight for a farmer to once grow a cabbage that weighed 80 pounds. 80 pounds of cabbage. All this daylight changes the way people act. No one wants to go to sleep. You need dark window shades to make it feel like bedtime. Children feel like playing all night long.
You could plan a baseball game for 11 o'clock in the evening. In spite of all the sunlight, the summers near the Arctic Circle are not very warm, although sunny summer days feel warm to the people who are used to living here. Children in Alaska begin wearing shorts to school when the temperature is about 50 degrees. In a few places, like Fairbanks, summer temperatures may go as, oh my gosh, may go as high as 85 or 90. Why do people want to live in a land where winters seem endless and most of the land is wilderness? For some, it is the beauty of the wilderness itself. For some, it's the challenge of settling a frontier, being the first to make a civilization. For some, life here is a test of themselves. They take pride in making a life of joy and purpose in a harsh land, for there is certainly plenty of work to be done. This is a place of opportunity for doers. Life here feeds the imagination. Can you imagine living here? Well, friends, thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. I really hope you enjoyed it. I know it was a little bit longer than what we've been doing recently, but it gives you kind of an idea of what we have here in Alaska, and kind of what our life is like up here. Like I said, we're not Alaska native, so some of the things don't necessarily apply to us, but we have got to experience a lot of it. Like, we do our dip netting on the Kenai Peninsula every summer. In July, the season opens, and we get to catch our limit of salmon. And, you know, we go hunting for a moose every fall, and we get to fill our freezer with that. And occasionally you can fly down to Kodiak and see the big brown bears and get a hunting permit for that. And, I mean, everything is super regulated, but it fills up our freezer, and we get to feed our family based off of what we have here in the land. And a lot of people garden, too. I mean, I think most of my neighbors have chickens, and they garden things like their potatoes, and just strawberries, snap peas, all sorts of things in the summertime. It really is a beautiful place. But anyway, I hope you guys have a good night, and I hope you enjoyed the story. Thank you so much. We'll hear from us soon.